Ladies and gentlemen, we didn't have our usual intro this evening, or whenever you're listening to the show. We come to you this week on a bit more of a somber note, as I'm sure you all have already heard and know about the unfortunate, tragic circumstances of this past weekend. I've taken the life of Royals pitcher Yordano Ventura at 25 years of age. Just incredibly unfortunate series of events that led to him being in a fatal car crash, and he is no longer with us. So it was a shocking bit of news that came out Sunday. I was my wife was out of town, so I was watching my daughter and had a free moment to check Twitter, and I saw something about a report from the Dominican Republic and Yordano Ventura being dead, and it was just like, this is, it had one of those kind of surreal moments, and you know, kept scrolling through my Twitter feed after that, and it came out, and it was true, and it's incredibly unfortunate. So tonight it won't be business as usual, nor should it be, so we'll just kind of discuss a little bit about just the news, and you know, it's just everything about Yordano Ventura and kind of what he meant to this organization, and maybe share some of our favorite memories and such. But you know, we're not going to get into the baseball implications or anything like that. There'll be plenty of time to talk about that later. You know, now it's just going to be celebrating the immense talent that was Yordano Ventura. But you know, I guess for a place to start, I mean, what, when you first heard it, you know, Mike, what was your reaction?
Well, that morning, I was just lying around, and you actually posted into the BP Slack chat room, and you said, like, oh no, Ventura, oh no, or I don't remember what you said, but as soon as you did, I was like, something that's not good. So I hopped on Twitter, and for maybe a minute I was trying to scroll and find something, and I didn't see anything coming up. So I was like, all right, maybe there's something weird. And it was kind of like, yeah, I mean, it was, when I finally saw the first report and other people started reacting, there was a sense of kind of, I don't know, it was kind of like dread, you know. It was like I kind of saw the report and it seemed legit, but I was still kind of sitting there saying, no, that, I mean, something can't be right here. And then got to the point where, as more information started to come out, that's the dread and the denial part of it, where it's like, no, there's got to be some other explanation for this, because it's just such a crazy thing to happen. And you know, like you said, he's 25 years old. You don't expect something like that to occur. You know, you figure that those guys are just gonna keep on going. And so that was my kind of first reaction, was just the shock, the dread, the denial. I just couldn't believe it was happening. And then finally it ended up, you know, being confirmed. And still, you know, we're a few days removed from it. We're recording on a Wednesday night, and it still doesn't seem, you know, it's one of those where you see his picture pop and you think, oh, what's the, and then you remember for half a second. So that was kind of my first kind of reaction to it. And then I think everybody else was feeling pretty much the same way. It seemed like, where there was, you know, confusion, there wasn't a lot of information, and then just trying to wrap your head around all of it. You know, it's such a tragic loss that it just doesn't seem right. Doesn't seem like it could happen, you know. And we've been through this before, where Jose Fernandez a few months ago passed away, and Oscar Tavares a couple of years ago, and you know, it's just, it gets to a point where you just don't expect it. And that shock really kind of, I think, I don't know, I guess it kind of, it got me to where I couldn't believe what I was reading. And then as more information came out, I had to, you know, confront it. So that, I guess that was my initial reaction to all of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a healthy level of skepticism in embedded now in us when you hear shocking news like that, because just the way news works now, where, you know, it's not the intense, laborious fact checking that, you know, in the All the President's Men era, you know, it's, if you heard it from a credible source, then you run with it, especially with Twitter and how fast Twitter moves. So, you know, your kind of initial thought of, you know, maybe this can't be right. And then I think when you combine that saying, okay, this came from the Dominican Republic, there's a language barrier there. Sometimes things get, you know, for lack of a better term, lost in translation, mm-hmm. where, you know, you can, I mean, I think even Lesky at one point was like, you know, is it possible that Yordano Ventura is a common name? You know, is there another Yordano Ventura that could have died and people are just running with this? You know, it's kind of that last grasp, but I hope it's as bad as that sounds, but, you know, kind of mm-hmm. is it possible that it's not him? And there's some just massive confusion. And, you know, that obviously wasn't the case, but, you know, I think we all kind of go through those moments. And, you know, it was so kind of strange just to, you see it, and immediately, you know, the first thing that jumped to my head was Oscar Tavares, because, you know, mm-hmm. that was such a big deal. And, you know, Tavares was primed to come up and be a superstar in baseball. He was very heralded prospect, and, you know, Ventura was a close friend of his, and he honored him in the World Series in 2014, which is when it happened. And he, you know, it was game six, and he had Tavares's initials and his number written on his hat. And he went out and, you know, pitched a fantastic game as a rookie in game six of the World Series. And, you know, he kind of said he was, you know, motivated, impassioned by, you know, the memory of his friend. And it just, the two events, you know, 2.5 years apart were so similar. It was kind of striking. And it was just, you know, because the first reports were obviously his death, and then, you know, the next report, you know, the next piece of the report that came out was that he may have been intoxicated, and we're not going to get into the those kind of details.
That hasn't been determined yet.
Yeah, and so, but that just even furthered the similarities in my head, because, you know, Tavares was intoxicated, and you mentioned Jose Fernandez, he was intoxicated as well. Mm-hmm. When these things happen. And, you know, since it's come out, since people have started talking about that, you know, they've asked them, or Dayton Moore said, they asked him on an interview that he did, and they're, you know, how do you try and prepare these guys, especially, you know, the foreign players, like when they go back to a place like Dominican Republic, how do you prepare them for leaving and going back down there where, you know, you're no longer just a normal, you know, he's not a normal citizen here. But in a small country like the Dominican Republic that has, you know, it's a poorer country than the U.S. and there's, you know, he's a huge superstar there, just as all the very prominent Dominican players are. But also, you know, there's a target on your back in a lot of places like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we were talking about him earlier this week, the guy that was, he was taken hostage, who was
kind of Wilson Ramos.
Wilson Ramos,
the catcher, and that was in Venezuela, but it was, you know.
But it's, you know, it's the same. And it's just another example of you know, going back to where you're from and having a target on you. So, you know, it's, and nobody, there's no evidence that Yordano was targeted, but just the idea that, you know, the organizations have a lot that they try and impart on these men to prepare them to go back to these places and not be, you know, be outside of arm's reach of the organization. And that's got to be tough. You know, all you can do as an organization is say, you know, be careful, you know, especially you hear some stories of scouts and stuff going to the Dominican Republic and they won't drive, you know, they'll, mm-hmm. they'll hire a driver, they'll get taxis or whatever, you know, they're petrified to drive because it's a very, very different atmosphere down there of driving. And so, you know, they're trying to, there's so many of these things that we just don't realize that are just cultural differences, you know. And I was, I can't remember who I was telling the story to, but there was a Vietnam woman, a Vietnamese woman in my accounting class in college and my accounting program. And we had a Vietnamese teacher, or not a Vietnamese teacher, a teacher who had lived in Vietnam for a while. He spoke Vietnamese, and he was trying to prove a point about something I can't even remember, but he was asking her, he's like, so, you know, how are stoplights viewed in Vietnam? You know, and she kind of laughed, and she was like, they're more just guidelines. You stop if you can, type of thing, you know. So, and that's just normal. And so that's how they kind of deal with things when they drive. They know it's an expected kind of risk, but, you know, coming back from, you know, coming from America, where it's very different. And it just, again, it's just, there's all these things. And then, you know, you still have to, you still just can't fight the fact that these kids are young, you know. Even Ventura at 25, I mean, you know, I'm only 31. I'm not by any means like super old wise man, you know, but from 31 to 25, I can tell you, I did a lot of stupid shit at 25 that I would not do now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's only so much you can do. And so it's just, there's so much tragedy involved in this situation. And regardless of what all the details are, you know, I've heard it described this way. And I think it started from somebody pulling another quote from Dayton Moore, that no matter what comes out or what other details, it's just, it's a loss. Mm-hmm. It's a net loss for everyone, you know, for the Royals, for, you know, more importantly, for Ventura's family, for us as fans, just for everything. Nobody is bettered by Ventura.
No one's spared by any of it.
So regardless of that situation, I mean, it's tough to, it's very difficult. And you could hear, I don't know how many interviews you heard. I didn't hear a Dayton Moore interview. I've read some of the quotes from different sources, but I did hear a JJ Piccolo interview the day after it happened.
I haven't listened to that, but I've heard of it.
It was very difficult to get through. Actually, I was, you know, I was driving on my way to work, and
it was Monday morning, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so right after.
Yeah. And he, you know, he's choked up at a couple moments, and, you know, just it was on Border Patrol on 810, and they were very respectful of him. And so they didn't, you know, interrupt. And it was just kind of radio silence for sometimes 5-10 seconds as he tried to compose himself, you know. And it's just like, it's just really tough to hear that. And, you know, this organization specifically, we've talked so much about how, you know, like we've talked, especially in the last few episodes, you know, regardless of someone like Eric Hosmer, if he ends up leaving and going somewhere, any of these free agents after next year, you know, they'll go somewhere, they may win some games, they might even win a World Series, but they'll, you know, they'll never be on a team like the 2015 Royals, and they'll always have that. And they're, you know, the greater likelihood is that they probably won't win a World Series, but that's beside the point. The familial atmosphere that was created around this organization has been a big reason why us as fans have been so quick to latch onto them now that they've had success. And, you know, it's Dayton Moore and JJ Piccolo and guys like that that have really fostered that atmosphere. And then, you know, you hear it, and I kind of got the first true glimpse of it at the parade with Dayton Moore, you know, just the look on his face, the way he presented himself, you know, like, you can really just see and feel the pride he has, not from a selfish, hey, I did this as GM, nobody told me I could do it type of thing. Like, I honestly believe Dayton Moore does not care about any of that stuff. I think he truly cares about, he's proud of the guys that he assembled and what they've been able to accomplish. And I think he looks at them, truly does look at them like sons. And most of them, you know, have been, Ventura's been in the organization since he was 16.
Yeah.
So, you know, more he probably feels like his life. Yeah, almost 10 years now. So, you know, probably feels like a lot like a son, and that's, you know, what they lost. And it's just, it's heartbreaking to hear them go through that, you know, kind of in real time, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, it's been difficult enough just as a fan. Like, I mean, I've never met Jordan Ventura. I've never spoken to him. I don't know him beyond what you see on TV and post game and you know, reading stories. But I was pretty strongly affected that day. Especially, it kind of went in phases. It was that initial, okay, the national reports, you know, have something going with the news of the death. And then the Royals confirmed, and I started to lose it a little bit. And then you started to get the teammates posting things about it. And that's when it was just like, just done. I'm just done. It felt like, you know, we've paid attention to these prospects for so long, you know, and the first time I remember hearing about him was somewhere in 2010. And, you know, that's a long time to follow a person you don't know. And so you kind of see him develop, and yeah, it's only in the context of baseball, but you know, you look at everything else, the World Series, you see his effect on his teammates, you see, you know, everything else that goes on. And to me, you can't help but kind of take that loss personally in a way, even though it's not anybody I know. And that, you know, that's not to, you know, minimize or equate my feeling of grief about it with what anybody in that organization feels, because I can't even imagine what that feels like. I mean, it feels like, it's got to feel like literal family. You know, it's going to be something that's going to be with a lot of them for a long time. So for me, I mean, it was rough, but you know, it can't be the same as what those guys are going through. And that's kind of, that's probably like a ripple effect. That's probably why it hit so hard in the middle of the day on Sunday. Was like, you know, you're just seeing everybody else react to this news and everything. And, you know, I think the sympathy you feel for those people then kind of bounces back onto you. So I think that was kind of an echo effect happening. But it wasn't alone. You know, it was, everybody else was reacting that way. And you see so many tributes that have come out since, so many fans and you know, reporters who have covered things and written things in so many columns. And it's just like, you know, everybody got dinged somehow, and everybody kind of deals with it in their own way. So I don't know. I don't really know if I had a big point, but you know, the family thing that you speak of is something that's very real, and we've seen it outside of the context of this kind of tragedy. We've seen it in every other aspect over the last few years. And then you see it when they go to his town in the Dominican Republic, where Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Gerard Dyson and Greg Holland, who hasn't even really been on the team, you know, for a couple of years or more than a year, goes down there with them. And Salvador Perez, of course, and Alcides Escobar, and even former teammates, Edinson Volquez and Johnny Cueto, went down there, mentors. In a sense, Volquez got to spend a couple of years with them. Obviously, Cueto just a few months. But, you know, that maybe that would have happened with any other team, probably. But it's still, you know, you watch them in that kind of setting and you watch how it goes. And, I mean, that family connection, that was significant. And that's, you know, why you see such strong reactions to all of this. I mean, it's like Salvador Perez said, it's, you know, he wasn't just a teammate, he was a brother. And like, they say that with as much sincerity as I think you probably could. You know, I think more than any other situation, I mean, that he's really a brother to someone. And so it's pretty, pretty heavy, you know, heavy situation for all of them. And, you know, we'll see, I guess, you know, where it goes from there.
Yeah, you know, it's, excuse me. So with the whole family thing, you know, and the way you kind of said you felt a part of it almost. And, you know, I kind of felt that way too. And I think that, you know, as fans, we've grown so close to this organization not only because they've been successful and they've been winning, but because of this family thing that they've fostered, and they try to include the fans in that, you know? And so I think subconsciously, I can only speak for myself, but, you know, I kind of projected myself into that, you know, whether it's watching Salvador Perez hassle Lorenzo Cain on Instagram, or whether it's, you know, watching Gerard Dyson and Lorenzo Cain and Moustakas and Hosmer and Perez all dressed up in denim doing family portraits and things like that. You know, it's they've included us with social media, and the fan, the organization has done a great job of getting the fans involved. So we, you know, I think subconsciously a lot of fans kind of felt that way, that we were in there with them, you know, even though, you know, we obviously weren't. And so, you know, I think there is some validity to that. And then, you know, you talk about the other players and some of their, you know, kind of personal accounts and everything. And, you know, I mentioned this. We had our an article that we all kind of put together the Monday morning and Sunday night, but then I put it out Monday morning, just kind of all our initial thoughts. And, you know, a piece of my initial thoughts was just that, you know, so much of sports and athletes is this kind of reverence we have for them that goes beyond their humanity. And so we forget about their humanity, you know, and how fragile we all are. And, you know, as part of that, you know, you start to think of them as invincible. And even though we hear these kind of stories, the Oscar Tavareses and the Jose Fernandez, you still, like, you know, just like anything else, you don't ever feel it's going to happen to you, you know, and whether, you know, that's Jordana Ventura or whether that's his teammates or the fans or whatever. And this is obviously not something that happened to me, so I'm talking, you know, in the figurative sense, of course. But so, you know, it's always a very harsh reminder to be reminded of just that these guys are just, they're just human, just like the rest of us, and they make mistakes and they do all these things. But, you know, I wanted to read Christian Colon, the and Day It Happened, when it had kind of sunk in. He sent out a tweet with a screenshot of something that he had wrote. I'll just read it here. What his he was pretty close to Jordana Ventura, and his thoughts are as follows. Quote, "How can I even begin to explain how much I cared about you? You were like a little brother to me. You were a tough one to deal with, with your love and smile, you could always make everything okay. We would have long conversations about life, about how much we wanted to be great in all aspects of life. I knew the struggle you had to overcome to get where you were, and I could always see it in your eyes that you wanted more. I knew your secrets and I knew your strengths. I knew any time you needed a teammate to help you with something, that teammate would be me. I'm so happy to be able to say I knew you. I'm going to miss you more than you know. I know at times that you were tough, but I knew you were just misunderstood. Love you, bro, and you will forever have a special place in my heart." So that was it was a very heartfelt remembrance from Christian Colon, kind of, you know, right off the cuff, right shortly after it happened, and very raw emotionally. And, you know, you saw a lot of that on display with some of the pictures they had from the funeral just yesterday on Tuesday. So I guess yesterday from when we were recording this, but it won't be from when you're listening. But so, you know, it's and they had you know, Salvador Perez gave a eulogy, and to be honest, I haven't read it. I didn't know if I'd be able to make it through, to be honest. I heard it was very well done, and all that. I'll probably, you know, after it's had a little bit more time to settle, I'll probably go back and read it. But it's you know, you always kind of, for whatever you revere about athletes, you always kind of want confirmation from the people that actually knew him. You know, like, it always sucks to hear. I remember someone like Michael Jordan, right? Like, we grew up, Michael Jordan
was the biggest star there was.
He didn't exist in the Twitter era and the Facebook era and constant media attention and everything. So, you know, everyone thought he was this, like, super awesome, great guy. And he, you know, was a good role model and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, as after he retired and things started coming out, people started writing books and stuff about the Bulls and whatever, you know, it turned out that he was kind of an a-hole, you know, and people didn't really like him.
Yeah.
And he had illegitimate children and all these kinds of things. And, you know, whatever you want to say about, you know, Michael Jordan as a player, you know, that the off the court persona couldn't live up to the on the court one, because it, you know, it just didn't. So it always is kind of disheartening a little bit, I think, if you grow up loving an athlete and you hear they're just not, you know, not that they have to be good people, you know, because that's not their job. Their job is to entertain with their athletes and their athleticism. And that's what Michael Jordan did better than anybody probably ever. So I'm not trying to say that that's, but I think there's a piece of you, a piece of all of us that wants, okay, I want my favorite athlete to not only be really good athlete, but to be a good person too, and to be, you know, somebody that I would like if they weren't an athlete and just kind of hang out with. You know, that'd be, I think we all have that desire. And, you know, when you see the, it's very clear from the, at least to me it seems, from the personal recantations of what Yordano Ventura was off the field, that he was essentially the same guy that you saw on the field, you know, and he was very boisterous, very enthusiastic, had a very infectious smile, was loved to have fun, but, you know, did have a temper, did have some moments where he could lose his cool and get himself into trouble. You know, we saw that on the field,
yeah.
And that appears to be the very same person that he was off the field. You know, and, you know, I think we all have a friend who can, or a family member or something who can be like that, you know, just maybe sometimes difficult to deal with, but, you know, deep down they're a great person. And it seems just from all the accounts we've heard, that's basically what Yordano Ventura was. And, you know, it's just a shame.
Yeah. You know, it was, I felt kind of weird feeling so upset about it, but it makes sense because there's so many other things you confront. It's, you know, you get reminded of people you've lost. You have to kind of face your own mortality. You get that shock, like you said, that these guys aren't invincible and, you know, that the world isn't perfect. So that's, I think, you know, another thing that kind of hits in these situations. That cologne, you know, what you read is, man, I mean, that was another thing that they got me was, you know, when they showed, they did the vigil for, you know, on Sunday night, out at Kauffman Stadium, and so many people had shown up and taken flowers and baseballs and caps and signs and candles and everything, you know, all kinds of stuff just to kind of pay their respects. And, you know, I don't know if you've watched the video. I know for a lot of people, there's a lot of stuff out there and it can be really overwhelming to try to read it all and keep processing it because it just can stir everything back up. So I would recommend anybody do it when you're ready. You know, you don't have to read it all now. It's not going anywhere. But Duffy's out there, you know, talking to the people, telling his, you know, showing his appreciation for them coming out. Cologne is just broken, man. I mean, he was, the pain on his face was just, he just wanted to cry and man, feel so bad for him. But I think it felt to them, to, it was Duffy and Cologne and Ian Kennedy. There might've been others, but I think it was just those three who went out there. And I think it was really important for them to go out and show the appreciation to the fans who had gone, you know, to include them as part of the family and kind of be, you know, be, I don't know, be there for each other and for everybody else. So it's, I don't know. I mean, it was, I would say you mentioned the eulogy. I went back and I read the piece that Vahe Gregorian wrote for the Star. He was, went down there with John Sleaser and the rest of the Kansas City contingent. And just a really well done story for such a delicate and complicated situation. And there's a video of Perez performing the eulogy, and it's rough. I mean, it is. It was when I shared it on Twitter, I was like, if you're ready for it, you should read this. But people can take whatever time they need to steel up to that. It's certainly not an easy situation. So I don't know. It's still kind of tough. I think we're a few days removed, so it's a little easier. There are distractions that, can kind of take our mind off of it. But it's still going to be something that for a little while, it's probably going to be on everybody's minds up until spring training starts and until game starts. And it's always going to be something that will be a part of the narrative of this season is the loss of Yordan Ventura, and there will be, I'm sure, some kind of tribute or reminder or something at the stadium once the season starts. We'll see how the Royals are gonna treat that on opening day, if nothing else, if not every day or who knows. Because I think that they've never been in this position as a franchise where, well, they've never been with a player where someone, who was active on the roster passed away. The closest would be like Dick Houser when he was manager and, had to resign and died shortly after from cancer. And, he was well regarded then, and he's, his number's retired now. He's won a World Series, but there was always that kind of sense, it seemed, kind of looking back, that that was a pretty significant and deep loss then, and this is in that same category. And so the Royals will do their best, I think, to honor that and honor what Ventura did, because he in his short time he did quite a lot. I mean, he wasn't he wasn't the literal ace, but he performed well. And you mentioned the 2014 World Series. That was a huge game for him after a really strong rookie year. I think back to his major league debut. I went out to that game because Ventura coming up was one of my favorite minor leaguers to read about. Because I mean, he was this kid who wasn't even 6 foot, who could throw 100 miles an hour and had this buckling curveball. I mean, that's who wouldn't be excited to find out, if that kid can pitch at this level. And I went out there and I was impressed because they had his jersey for sale already, like right there first day. And I was like,
They
well, that's pretty cool.
must know something.
And that's the kind of stuff, once we kind of get past the mourning period and thinking about the loss is, you go back and you think about like those goofy moments, where he's just kind of palling around with Volquez and Cueto after big series wins and playoff clinchers and things like that. One of the things where Joel Goldberg told a couple of really cool stories where he would talk about Ventura and how he was learning English and how he didn't always want to use it because he wasn't always confident in it. But then there's a, I think this was after the, maybe the division was won, I think. Maybe it was the ALC, I don't remember. But basically he took the microphone from Joel and he started to interview Edinson Volquez, but in Spanish. And then after it, he handed it back to Joel and in perfect English was like, next question. And it was like, just kind of goofing with them. And there's another story where Goldberg was talking about, how he didn't want to do it. And then he just went ahead and did an interview in full English. And, just kind of, I don't know. He was, I don't know, kind of a, I don't want to say goofball. That doesn't capture it right. But, he wasn't, the reputation he got from a lot of people in the league was he was this hothead that he couldn't control his emotions. And I think he was just this, from what I know of him, again, I haven't met him, never knew him, But from reports and other teammates and other people who have met him, yeah, I mean, they were like, yeah, he had this temperament, but you know, he also had this very loose and you know, kind of playful, maybe mischievous kind of aspect to him. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that, yeah, like you said, you know, nobody has a bad thing to say about him, at least, you know, off the field. I mean, I'm sure some people weren't fans of him on the field, for some of his actions, but you know, when nobody can come up with a bad thing to really say, you know, not just because he's died and no one really wants to speak ill of the dead, but because, you know, there wasn't really anything else that came out from off the field. You know, there wasn't, you know, any, he wasn't regarded as a jerk off the field. You know, he was, you know, not a simple, oh, he's a jokester, but you know, there was something kind of genuine there, that I think, you know, worked within that clubhouse and you know, made him a lot of fans in Kansas City too. So, you know, to your point, yeah, I think it is something where you recognize that person, who you can like as well as the player.
Yeah, you know, and just to kind of reminisce on I remember first time I heard your Yordano Ventura, it was back when I was writing for you at Kings of Kauffman. I was doing all the minor league stuff, and I remember he came up with a player named Robinson Yombati, who we've talked a couple times about on here, just for this very same reason, just that they came up, and you know, I think there were some that maybe even liked Yombati a little bit more
Yeah.
than
Well,
Ventura, and Ventura.
he was bigger. I mean, Ventura was 160 pounds soaking wet and
And he had that, you know, quote unquote reliever profile,
yeah.
you know, because he was short and he threw hard and he was, you know, perceived as like a max effort guy, and so it felt like similar to Kelvin Herrera, where you know Herrera was a starter in the minors, and it was kind of okay, we'll push him along as a starter and see as far as we can get, and then when things don't keep working, then we'll move him. And he couldn't stay healthy as a starter, so they moved him to a reliever, and then he of course exploded into one of the best relievers in baseball as he is now. But with Ventura, it was that same kind of approach, it felt like, you know, just as an outsider, of course, I haven't spoken to anybody to know that this is the truth or anything, but you know, this is kind of how it felt, where it was, okay, let's just keep, you know, as we keep moving along, we'll just keep him as a starter until he doesn't have success. And he just continued to have success at every level. And then, you know, as soon as he came up and we saw how good he was, and it was like, okay, you know, must see television every time. And then the Let's Throw Fire hashtag was born by him in a moment of just pure amazingness that can only happen in today with Twitter and all that stuff. And that hashtag will live on forever now, and as it should. And it was, you know, it kind of showed a little bit something, I think, and we talked about it as he was maturing as a player at the big league level in these last couple of years. When he was on, when he was really on, and he was doing so well, you know, specifically 2014, when he had that great rookie year, you know, we both remarked on it that just the Royals have not had a pitcher like that. So as far back as I can remember, really, you know, I am a little bit younger, so I was kind of the tail end of the Saberhagen and Gubzal, that era when they had the really good pitching. So my entire life, the Royals have just had crappy pitching. And finally, here was this kid who comes up, lights up the radar gun, has a really good changeup, just a good, you know, really just good stuff, and he had that swagger, you know, that attitude, and his fearlessness was so amazing given his age. Even just last season, you know, at 25, it was still amazing to see how fearless he was, no matter who the hitter was. You know, if it was David Ortiz, if it was Mike Trout, I mean, he was talking smack to Mike Trout as he crossed his home plate. You know, I mean, he doesn't care.
We still don't know why. And
yeah, still
don't know why.
We'll probably never figure that out now. But, you know, it was just one of those things that, you know, he didn't back down from anybody. And, you know, when anytime the Royals had a pitcher that would come up and have some success kind of before this current wave, you know, if a pitcher came up and had some early success, it would seem like the Royals would put that on them almost, and they would kind of shrink behind the moment. And then just kind of, you know, it's like a Jimmy Gobble type situation that comes up and, oh, he had two really good starts. He won a game against the Yankees. This guy's going to be legit, man. He's going to be good. And then, you know, he toils in obscurity for the next however long. And, you know, Kyle Davies, oh, this guy's going to be legit, man. He's good. He's got great stuff. Even as he left the organization because he was so terrible, everyone was like, oh, he has great stuff. They wouldn't let that go. But, you know, he just didn't have it. He couldn't put it all together. Then here we got this guy like Yordano Ventura, and he's got this 100 mile an hour fastball. He can be a starter, man. This kid can be legit. He can really make it happen. And he did. You know, it was just super impressive. And it's the first time the Royals have done that, and again, so far as I can remember. And, you know, I guess, you know, Danny Duffy came before him, but he had struggles and he had Tommy John and everything. He's kind of been more of a late bloomer, and Ventura was just right away, and the talent was immense and it was in your face. And, you know, I think that maybe the most prominent thing that I'll kind of remember, like, it kind of dovetails into the game six of the World Series in 2014, but the wild card game, you know, he got put in. I mean, we're all live tweeting this. I remember, you know, nobody liked the call of putting in Yordano Ventura in the situation that he did. And we were talking, you know, had the Royals ended up losing that game, Ned Yost might have been fired because of that very move. And after the game, even though the Royals had won, after the game, Pedro Martinez went out of his way to say, he looked into the camera and talked specifically to Yordano, like, hey, man, keep your head up. Don't worry. That was not your fault. You were put into a bad situation. You know what I mean? That's like, you don't see that type of thing, you know, that often. And there was a lot of, I think people made some Pedro comparisons to Ventura, mostly due to size and background, I think. But, but you know, to be in that situation as a rookie, and to have that horrible thing happen to you, and to know, I don't know that he was able to really grasp how much weight was on that game from the city. I mean, it's hard to not feel it, given how that series went. So I'm sure he felt a little bit of it. Maybe not the full magnitude, but I'm sure he felt a little bit of it. So I'm sure there was, and you could see it on his face after he, you know, gave up those runs. You know, he felt like he let people down. You could kind of tell. So to be in that situation, to have that go that badly, and then to turn around and have a great rest of the playoffs, and then that amazing game six to push to a game seven and give the Royals one more chance to win the World Series. I mean, just that sequence of a few weeks, I mean, it's like that's all you needed to know that he was – I mean, how many what was the guy's name? Mitch Williams? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, gives up a home run to Joe Carter. His career is ruined.
Never got past it.
Ruined from that. You know, Cliff, Brad Lidge gives up that home run to Yadier Molina in the NLCS in, was that 06?
I don't remember the year, but.
Anyway, one of those years that the Cardinals made the World Series, and, you know, it took him years to come back from that. You know, he struggled after that. So we've seen scenarios where a player has been ruined by just being one bad situation, one something. And here was Ventura possibly in that situation, and he turns right around and pitches great. And, you know, it made you so excited for him as a talent, because that, you know, it's hard to teach the ability to, you know, that kind of goes back to his swagger and his attitude, to get over that and then to have the talent to continue moving forward. I mean, it was, that was kind of one of the things that I think will, in my mind, make the legend of Yordano Ventura so great, is just that, you know, that's something that we just hadn't seen as Royals fans, seen players that have been able to cope with, you know, that kind of failure and then come right back and, you know, come right back at you. And that was just, it's incredibly impressive.
Well, his very next outing was a start against the Angels in the ALDS that year, and he like seven innings and dominated and just bounced back like it was nothing. And then, you know, obviously went to the you know, that game six in the 2014 World Series, you know, and the game six of the ALCS in 2015 was a really big start too. He, you know, hadn't been as sharp in that playoffs, and you know, he was there. I mean, it was, the Royals were kind of losing the momentum. If they lose game six, who knows what happens game seven. He came out and pitched really well. And, you know, that was after a shaky 2015 where he started out so rough. He had all those incidents, you know, Adam Eaton and Brett Lowry and Trout. I still don't know what the image is always Sal Perez, who's huge, and Mike Trout, who's huge, and here's Yordano Ventura trying to get through Sal to get to Mike Trout for who knows why. But that was it. That was, you know, it was small dog, big fight. You know, that was what it was. And the word that people always would use for him was phenom. You know, he just,
yes,
just came right in. He's throwing gas. You know, he looks like nothing, like you said, nothing the Royals have really had in a long time. I mean, you know, you'd have to go back to like Tom Gordon, Kevin Apier to find guys who kind of jumped right out and performed at a high level as rookies and then sustained it. Didn't look like they could sustain it. And another thing that I thought about was I remember after the Futures game in 2012 in Kansas City, I think that was the first time I ever saw Ventura pitch, was in that game when he started it. And after the game, they asked him, someone asked him, "Do you realize that you hit 103 times in that inning?" And he's like, "Yep." Because he just knew. He's like, "Yep, I know."
Yep, I heard that clip on the radio the other day. That was pretty cool.
What do you think? And of course I know that. And it's, you know, it just kind of strikes me that it's somebody who, you know, kind of knew what he was capable of and was just putting things together to kind of get it, to make that next jump, to make that leap like Danny Duffy. I don't know. We'll miss being able to see that development. I mean, granted, it feels wrong to say that in a sports context because the loss is so much greater in so many other ways. But, you know, that's when these things happen. I mean, it is a lot of people, you know, are losing something too. So, I don't know. I mean, it's even beyond what he did, you know, in 2014, the Royals lose the World Series, and the next day he's out at a softball diamond hanging out with kids. You know, he put up academies in the Dominican and you know, was active in the RBI program in Kansas City. I mean, you know, you just that's what kind of gets me, is that so much of his time ended up going to, you know, spreading baseball and helping kids get into baseball and trying to be that kind of a role model. You know, you mentioned Pedro Martinez, and everybody called him Lil Pedro for a while. Hyperbolic maybe, but he modeled his pitching after Pedro. Pedro was his idol. You know, and maybe that's where some of that hot-headedness comes from. I don't know. Pedro had his incidents too. So, but I think it seems to me, and I don't think I've read an interview that points to this, but I think he kind of wanted to be that role model to others too. You know, so yeah, it just makes it unfortunate. It's all unfortunate. But you know, those are the things that I do remember, those big moments, the celebrations, he's dancing around in the post 2014 appreciation ceremony they did at Kauffman, and he's addressing the fans at the parade in 2015. You know, just someone seemed to enjoy being a part of the organization, enjoyed his teammates, enjoyed the game, and you know, lived pretty big. You know, and seems to have touched a lot of people in a brief amount of time. And I guess that'll end up being the legacy. You know, I don't know what the Royals will do. There's suggestions of retiring the number. They'll have some kind of mural, tribute, something will happen. You know, because he was kind of that special in that short of time. So interested to kind of see how the Royals kind of pay tribute to that. But, you know, I think the thing that you'll remember is that kind of, spirit, you know, that kind of energy on the mound. And, you know, that's what will endure once kind of the fog lifts over people.
Yeah. You know, that is kind of something we've kind of been tossing around. How would be the best way to memorialize Ventura? And excuse me, you know, I don't know that it's something we can reach a consensus on, or something that needs to have a consensus reached at this point. I'm sure it'll be, you know, they'll do something, as you said, and you know, the important thing, of course, will be the memories themselves. And you know, the players will definitely have him as their, not only as their teammate, but as their friend. And you know, we'll have him, and you know, I think the legend will begin to grow. You know, I have no doubt that regardless of how soon it is, you know, Yordano Ventura, who I think we had mentioned before that he was probably on track, if he played out his contract, to be a Royals Hall of Famer someday. And I think he almost assuredly will be in the Royals Hall of Fame. And you know, it's you know, I think the legend will grow, that game six of the World Series will have been played in a 100,000 200,000 capacity stadium instead of 38,000. Everybody was there. So many people saying that they'll be there or that they were there. And you know, it'll move from, you know, did you know you hit 103 times in an inning to 4 times to 5 times, you know, 10 times in an inning, and you know, these kinds of things. And yeah, as people kind of talk about it and tell their kids, and if my daughter ever asks, you know, it'll be able to tell her the, you know, all the how the legend of Yordano Ventura took place. And it'll be kind of fun to see how that develops. You know, I mean, I think there's a, and people kind of talked about, you know, a lot of the different, you know, movie stars and stuff we've seen that have, you know, died too young, whether it's like a recent example, like a Heath Ledger, or you know, an older one, like a James Dean or Marilyn Monroe. You know, you can't always remember them at their greatest moments, even though at such young ages, they still had their own issues as well. So, you know, I think that's how Yordano Ventura will be remembered, you know, and even some of the lesser moments. You know, I remember being kind of ticked off at some of the stuff in 2015, you know, when whether it's, you
when
know,
it was John the third the or fourth
Blue Jays, the White Sox, and you know, getting in bench clearing brawls. And it's just kind of like, you know, I remember at the time we were saying, just grow up and you know, get past this. And you know, even Eric Hosmer said it himself in interviews after kind of the big one against the White Sox, I believe. And you know, he did, to his credit. They didn't have an incident the rest of the year, and they went on to win the World Series. So that's the kind of things that happen. But now when you know, as we get further away, we'll look back on it and almost look fondly upon that stuff, you know.
Maybe like John and Adam Eaton and
You know,
Neil
just
and
like
Brett Lowry.
Because we'll, you know, the more that gets revealed about him, the more we realize how much of a part of his personality that aspect of him was, and how how much that played into who he was as both a player and a person. So, you know, I think you can, there's a level of appreciation we'll have for now that we kind of know a little bit more, you know, because we didn't, I know more about Yordan Ventura now than I did, you know, 2 weeks ago. And it's because we've heard so many personal stories and things, and then you get to kind of feel why the team has his, had his back so much,
yeah,
and was still behind him, because now we hear all these stories of, yeah, he may be difficult to deal with, but he was also this really great person as well. So, you know, it'll be, you know, it's just, what can you say? You know, it's a difficult thing to deal with. It hasn't been fun as a fan, and I don't even want to begin to think the, you know, what it would be like to be the teammate or his family. You know, it's just, it's tough. It's never easy to deal with tragedy.
Yeah. I don't know if I can say it any better. It's unfortunate. It's very sad. It's, you know, it's something that these guys are going to play the rest of their lives, and pretty much they're always going to remember Ventura, and they're going to remember, you know, how he was as a teammate. And, you know, it's just going to be something that they're going to have this experience. They're going to have the World Series. They're going to have all of their minor league and, you know, debuts and developmental. And, you know, it's that core group that we've always talked about, that it's just another thing that'll keep them together. And I'm sure that those guys will be telling Yordan Ventura stories 30 years from now, 40 years from now. Remember that time you jotted Adam Eaton? That's going to be it. You know, they're going to tell, you know, the, like you said, the insults will be more colorful towards Adam Eaton, probably. But I don't know. I mean, it's even a couple days removed, still kind of difficult to read everything. You gotta kind of find a quiet place and then, you know, take your time to read it and appreciate what people are saying about it, and go from there. So I don't blame anybody if they're avoiding some of that stuff still, just because, you know, there's only so much you can really read sometimes. But there is a lot of, you know, good stuff out there by the Star and by other columnists and whatnot, and people sharing memories and stories and talking to people sharing those stories. So I recommend at some point throughout the course of the season, people should probably seek those out, just to, you know, get a better picture of this person who we've lost as fans and who they've lost as teammates, and the, you know, the family has lost as a son and brother and friend and you know, big person in their community.
Yep. So I think we've kind of said all we can about the topic. So, and unfortunately, we visit you with a very, very sad topic this week, but, you know, it was something that we definitely, you know, needed to discuss, and obviously, you know, it's the biggest thing going on right now in the Royals universe, so we had to talk about it, and kind of share our thoughts, and that's what we've given you. So, you know, we'll be back next week with some hopefully happier news. Well, I can't imagine anything being happy. So it will be, any news will be happier news,
right,
than this, you know. So we'll be back with something to talk about, and I'll be back to more on the field stuff, which will be a welcome topic of discussion after the difficulties of the past 4 days or so. So until then, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.